Okay, let's do this.
Let's do this. This person, how do I want to describe you, Blair? It's almost like I would like obviously say mentor first. I've kind of like have given you that. I feel like mentor, dear friend, somebody that I met 3 years ago on a whim. Maybe was it 3 years ago, 3 years, 4 years ago, at
Oh
my
my
previous
gosh.
job. Time does fly. I think it was about 3 or 4 years. We met. I fell in love with your presentation virtually, and I'm like, this woman is great, and I want to get into public speaking. And I'd simply reached out, and we've connected since then. Such an instrument in my life, just try to help navigate being a professional, but also just a person just to talk to. I feel like from miles away, we've never actually met in person, which makes it even the funniest thing ever. But you have an honor and pleasure to have CEO, founder of Leaders Uplifted, Blair Bloomston. Blair, how are you?
Oh, Rashad, I'm wonderful. And I appreciate that intro because I have been by your side for those intervening years as we've gotten to know each other. And what a wild journey it is. It actually is so odd that we haven't met in person because I do feel very connected and it's only been virtually.
Every time I think we meet, maybe what, once or twice every 2 or 3 months, and we just kind of connect, catch up with life. And I always have admired people from afar, but knowing this conversation really, I think, would inspire more to interview. Not because I know you, but I also think that people should know the journey or what it takes to get to these spaces. And so I do know, when we met, you were a CEO of a very known speaking firm, Game On. And I know this past few months ago, you transitioned to start your own thing. And I want to really
Did.
captivate the entrepreneurial spirit for those who may want to make that jump in life. Because, I think the funniest thing is when we had these conversations where you were talking about, how long you were doing one thing and then taking this leap into doing something else. And I've always been curious, like, what got you to this point? Like, what got you into becoming a speaker? Like, was there a background in this? You had any
Yeah.
family connections, things like that?
I love taking it back to the beginning, to the origin story, as they say. And I love it on this particular day, Rashad, because just yesterday, I got noticed as a LinkedIn top voice for public speaking. And I'm going to wear that like a Girl Scout badge of honor for sure. I'm going to just claim it. I know LinkedIn reassesses every 60 days, so now I have like my eye on the prize. But I'm a month into the launch of our new firm, Leaders Uplifted. It is a leadership-focused training agency, but I'm a big believer that the way leadership is conveyed is through communication, is through being able to, encourage your audience with words, encourage your team. And there's a lot of communication also that happens without words. So if we're talking origin story, my without words origin story is that I am a born performer. I spent my youth, my competitive sport was dance. I went on to actually do like competitions and things like that in high school. And then I had a transformative experience with the group that's called the Broadway Theater Project, and now is called the Performing Arts Project. It's evolved. And it showed me that I could have a career in performing, that I could have a career as a dancer and a singer and an actress. So, really, it goes back to starting college at NYU in the early 2000s, and then transferring to Marymount Manhattan College, where I got my degree in fine arts. And using those skills that I learned as a trained performer, as somebody who was very dedicated to studying the art of using our face, our voice, our body, every skill that we have to convey a message. That's really how I got started as a leadership coach about 2 decades ago.
Wow, I don't even think I knew about the performance arts piece. Like,
You
all the
gotta
stuff.
make my jazz hands come out on these Zoom calls, Rashad.
No, now that I think about it, it makes sense. Like, I definitely understand like where it comes from. I didn't know that though. Was there like a play or something that you did that you kind of knew like this is a big part of you? Like, was there like a moment that you felt like, wow, like I really am meant to be a performer?
Well, when I was very young, I was very into tap dance. And I actually got to tap with one of my mentors, Gregory Hines, quite a few times as a young person. And what was so powerful about what he taught is he taught improvisation, right? There was structure and rhythm and flow, but the way he taught, it was like jazz, but with your feet. And I think I was so terrified. I remember as like a 15-year-old girl, like hopping into the middle of an improv circle with all of these legends. And, but it was good fear. It was great. It was learned through experience. The only way out is through. And they were so supportive. And he cheered me on. And I have some like old photos of it that I get on a memory every once in a while. So that really, that kind of willingness to be afraid and go forward anyway with hope and optimism, that's what I had as a performer. And that is actually what I'm trying to teach leaders to do now, to get uncomfortable in a glorious way because it's all learning, and lead others with a brave example.
Sure. You just sparked the question. So transitioning now into you're doing this now with Leadership Uplifted, I'm trying to go back to like your first experience with public speaking and leadership. How do you think you best navigated through those spaces? I think I talk to you all the time about what it means to be a good leader, but in your eyes, what do you think is required to be a good leader?
A leader must have a heart to help other people. Otherwise, they are just an ego with management, you know, in their title. Yeah, a real leader comes at it from the position of giving back to others. And I think his name is Dr. Stephen Brown. I recently saw quoted, and I've seen this before, and it has been a maxim of mine recently, is that you can't call yourself a leader until you've created another leader who can create another leader, right? So that there's generational paying it forward of the skills. Unfortunately, I think there are too many times where people get a title or they have an idea and things become successful, and all of a sudden they kind of stamp themselves as unqualified. People can come to leadership through all sorts of different stories and qualifications, but at the heart, it's about taking care of others.
I want you to say, and I guess when you first got into leadership, what do you think was like the biggest thing that you learned just navigating on how to be a good leader or creating that generational leadership, like you said?
Well, I was in a really cool spot because I first got kind of informed about what leadership really was after college, after graduation. I had a great school experience, but my first job was centered in a sports boarding school called IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. It's a famous like hot spot for talented athletes. The Williams sisters used to train there when they were young, as an example. So when I got there, I could see that these young athletes and visiting pros were not just working on their sport. They were working on their mindset. There was a whole performance division, right? Mental conditioning dedicated toward a neutral mindset. Trevor Moad and Chad Bowling were two of the leaders of that division when I got there. I was there with Steve Schembaumann and Game On to work on communication skills. That was our primary focus, to help the athletes like have conversations, be in front of the media, develop their personalities. But there was physical conditioning. There was vision training. There was nutritional training. So what I learned in that environment for my first 8 years as a pro is that it takes a complete picture to really grow as a person. You can't just rely on the work achievements. You've got to prioritize life. You got to prioritize taking care of yourself. And again, back to that encouragement, although it was sports, it wasn't competitive, right? It was kind of cooperative. Everybody was getting better alongside of each other. So those are some of my takeaways.
And obviously with leadership, there's pros. The adversity pieces to that, how do you think you've navigated from an adversity piece of leadership then and then even now, even starting your own venture?
Well, I definitely felt it as a woman in kind of the sports industry. And I've never hid the fact that I appreciate sports. I sometimes jokingly call it sports ball because I'm not a super fan. But I have value that I can bring to the industry. You know, I remember early when we started to have NFL draft picks come through the program at IMG. So these gents would spend like 12 to 16 weeks before the combine to drop weight, gain speed, whatever they needed to do, because that combine was a big contest. But one of the coolest parts about the draft process is that there are interviews. And when all things are equally rated physically, all that potential, the player's position is the same, right? Sometimes their personality can really help them shine. So I remember, you know, I had two colleagues who were great at doing the media training. They were guys. They liked sports. They knew, you know, who all the players were and stuff. I didn't. But because we were a department and because we were a team, we had to share the space. Sometimes they just weren't available. And frankly, I wanted in. I wanted into that situation to say, hey, I can do this too. And so one of my highlights was actually getting to work with Kirby Smart, who's the head coach at Georgia now. When he was going in for some job interview training, you know, he wanted to like kind of hone his story as he transitioned from Alabama to Georgia. So for me, the adversity was in like, oh, she's here? I don't know. She seems very enthusiastic. Is that really right to work with these tough athletes? But I could see them eye to eye. I could see Coach Smart eye to eye as just people who want to communicate. So I was never shy from fighting to say, hey, I'll teach that class. I want in. I got that. No worries. I got this one. Yeah.
Oh, that's actually impressive. So you're pretty much saying that the main skill set was your ability to kind of help navigate in an enthused way, and the willingness to work through these things, I think is really cool. From a entrepreneurship, I guess, side of thinking now, because I'm more so curious, because, you know, when I heard about the transition, I was like, that's like some guts, man, to be, you're like, so I remember I reached out, and I was like, I haven't heard from her. Then I saw the thing going on LinkedIn, and I was like, that's why I haven't heard from her.
Yeah.
When you made the decision, I guess my first thing is like, what was your initial thoughts behind it? And two, I know you're still relatively early in the space. How have you been able to, I guess, transition from that?
I was, you know, with my last firm for 20 years, and I moved from intern into, you know, equity partner. And along the way, it was really important for me individually, aside from where the business was heading, to keep it interesting for myself and to kind of grow and reinvent myself. So I transitioned from being primarily a facilitator into learning the art of business development, into working on some major instructional design projects. And, you know, there's so many other things in between, too. I'm a self-taught government contracting nerd. Like, look at this special equipment. You can hear it in your audio. Like, I just geeked out about that hard.
Yeah.
So when, you know, a season was shifting in my life, and my husband and I, who have worked together for a long time, kind of looked at each other. Both of our parents were entrepreneurs. They both owned their own business. I didn't appreciate as a kid growing up in that household the intrepid, brave spirit it took to be like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I can figure it out. But suddenly I found myself having that same spirit too. And since I had pushed myself to never get complacent, to keep learning, to keep adapting and growing new skills, I'm not going to say I have it all figured out for sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm intrepid enough and confident enough that I've done this before. I always had an entrepreneur's mindset, even when I worked inside of a different firm. So that's certainly helping me along the way and helped me make the decision pretty quickly, because it was also important to me to never quiet quit, right? To all the way and then make a good transition.
Like, quiet quitting is quite the thing now. And in today's time.
I understand, because there's a lot of pressures, right? Work pace keeps increasing and increasing, and people have to kind of balance out life. Quiet quitting, I think, happens when you're at the end. There's, what else can you do? However, I would encourage people to think about the elements of not quitting on yourself within it. If you need to radically protect your energy, do that ethically, but don't quit on yourself or your own ambition, right? Do what you need to do to get out of that situation or evolve past it.
That's actually an interesting perspective. I never thought about it like that. Often you quiet quitting in a sense of, I'm not trying to overexpose. I think there's been a moment or two where I've considered quiet quitting in previous employments, kind of like just doing the bare minimum while slowly thinking, I'm about to get out of here. And not really recognizing that, I guess, the same problems that I had with there, I probably would have at the next place. And I'm thinking about the overall theme of why I'm doing this. So I think there's actually a very bright perspective on, like, it shouldn't be as self-serving as it may come off, at least. And that's how I'm interpreting it.
Oh, Rashad, I'm totally with you. I don't think it's a malicious thing. I think it's a defense mechanism. It's like a last stop of kind of people saying, I've got to make a change somehow. And it's done, I hope, with respect and, you know, not at the harm or expense of the organization. But again, you can't quit on yourself in it. If you need to, it's the same as like balancing social relationships. Sometimes we're with friends a lot. Sometimes we don't have a season for that, right? But at all points, we should just be trying to get back to balance, to equilibrium. So if you feel like you have to quiet quit at work, as quickly as you can, start up your work of working on yourself.
That makes sense, the balance piece. I'm thinking about kind of going back to the story piece. I know that your vision has changed immensely from doing performing arts into speaking and training now. What is the story that you want people to know about you, per se? I mean, I know it's always, at least my thought is, it's always ongoing. Chapters always continuing, but I guess right now at this present moment, like if somebody was curious to know, like, who is Blair?
Sure.
What do you want the story, I guess, to be presented as?
You know, I feel like it's a good thing that you're asking me this question, and I'm grinning ear to ear, like excited to say what the story is. I am so literally uplifted to help leaders right now, to help them grow, to help their mindset, to help them transfer optimism to others. And that is not from me. That's a kind of a reference to Jen Fisher, who's the Chief Human Sustainability Officer at Deloitte right now. That's in her book, Work Better Together. Yeah. When I named the company, I had a very clear objective. I wanted to specifically explain what I do in the company's name. No questions about it. I work with leaders. And that could be anybody who identifies himself as a leader, whether they have the title yet or not, right? We all have that empowerment to become leaders, to take proactive action in our lives, right? And then uplifted is a feeling. And it's a feeling that's grounded in authenticity. It's a feeling that's grounded in hope, in inspired action. These are things that I think only a few people in the industry are really adopting on a day-to-day basis. We've talked about physical well-being. We really focus on mental well-being. And maybe I'm coming at it from emotional intelligence here, but uplifted is a feeling. And I'll tell you, I'm smiling about telling this story because it wasn't until we picked the company name, my husband and I, that I realized how much I actually use the word uplifted in my everyday vocabulary. Like, I'm trying not to be too on top of it now and kind of back off, but I use that word. And after people talk to me all the time, you know, the number one thing I hear from friends, colleagues, potential clients after we chat is, I feel better. I feel better after this conversation. So I want to share that superpower with others.
Yeah, I think the greatest thing I've always have admired, I guess, about you and I in this our connection is, like, I'm like, this woman is always so positive. Like, I think I could share, like, I could share anything. And she's like, oh, you just look at it a different way. Like, let's, like, turn the frown upside down. And I'm curious to know, and you might have alluded to it, what kind of sparked this eager, enthused optimism. I know there's a performance element there. You have to act in character in certain things, but I'm always curious to know, like, are when people are like this, are they like this because they've made themselves like this, or they've always been like this?
Oh, Rashad, I appreciate that. And I want to hit on something that you just said, like the performance and in character, right? Because this is what I can tell you has kept me going for 20 years, not being in character, being authentic. And being okay with showing the parts of real me that need to show up in that moment. You know, if my energy is high, like if my barometer is like pressure, intensity, you know, I think of myself as like filling hot air balloons kind of with how I enter a room. That's not me all the time, but that's me when the moment is right for it. So I also have a big, you know, it's been cool. I'm in the debate on what is toxic positivity, because there are moments where too much positivity has an adverse effect, right? Like telling my child who's fallen down and scraped his whole knee up and he's bleeding, you know, and he's like seven, and I'm like, picking up the little pieces of this kid. It is not the right time to be like, son, you just need a mindset shift. There, he needs immediate, you know, band-aid attention and stuff like that. So leaders should be intuitive, again, to serve their team, to care about their team, to check in with their team and think, what does my teammate need before what do I need out of my teammate? If they could just make that shift, what does my teammate need first? And then let me calculate what I need out of my teammate right now. Because the soil grows, and then the soil has to rest, and then the soil grows, and then the soil has to rest. So like, and I guess grows the plants, like we deserve rest too. So yes, I bring it. I'm very excited to be on this podcast with you, Rashad, because we know one another. But I also rest. I also am quiet so that I have both. I can do both.
I'd like that, you know, authentic. In that, because I feel the same way sometimes when I've had opportunities to speak and present. Somebody told me that before, like when you're talking, you're like a totally different person. But then when I see you all the time, it's very just like low monotone. But like when you speak, it's like it's the same. And I kind of mentioned like feeling like I'm in character sometimes. But I do think that right when the moment is right or when the light is, I guess, being shined upon you, and that's, I guess, the time to do it, to kind of display yourself in a different way.
TikTok calls that main character energy.
Yes.
We are literally the main character in our own lives. Even those humble people out there, like, it's still your story. So, yeah, so it's okay to find your moment to turn on main character energy, particularly if you're a public speaker. It's kind of part of the job.
Yeah, and I wanted to get into that real quick before we wrap up. And you may have insight to this, I think. For those who may be interested in getting into public speaking, regardless like how to get into it, I know it can be its own hill and valley. I do think you do have good insight on providing like tips on how to be good at it. I do think people have an innate fear of public speaking. I think public speaking may be number one or two. I know between that and death, I think.
I feel like from like the 1950s now. Maybe we need to find an updated study, but I get your point.
But yeah, when I talk to people about public speaking all the time, I'm like, oh yeah, I love it. I enjoy it. It's like, there's no way I can do it. I'm like, well, if you really think about it, though, there's something about having the ability to try to captivate an audience for whatever it is, talking about whatever. Yeah, there's a nerve-wrackingness. I'm like, that's when you feel alive. Like, maybe I'm like, it's just me because people look at me crazy when I say that, but I'm curious to know, what do you think are some tips for those who may be interested to get into public speaking, or how to become better at public speaking, regardless of it's being a public speaker itself or just for like their job or anything of that nature? Sure.
Okay. So I will say this from the mountaintop of, I have been a public speaker for 20 years now, and I have delivered keynotes to, you know, rooms of thousands, and small groups too. I can't sometimes believe how I got here, because when I was a high school senior, my prep school required every senior to give a speech, a short 5-minute speech, senior speech day. It was going to be your day. I was absent twice because I was so freaked out about having to give a 5-minute speech. I was so terrified of it. I know it doesn't make sense, but at that time, I was studying acting where everything was on a script. So it wasn't about me. I just had to deliver the script well. And so fast forward to this 20-year career of being a public speaker, not just speaking, but who uses improvisation, game-based learning, right? There's no script. It was by design, there was no script. And it was get out there, do it, see what happens. And I've learned to get out of the water and get up onto the board and surf that wave now. But if you saw me on my senior speech day, the third time, when the teacher was like, oh, you're here, you're giving the speech now. And I was like, okay, yes, now. My 17-year-old self to where I am now, it's wildly different. So this is my advice. Anybody who tells you you don't need to prepare is incorrect. It is something that you need to prepare for. You need to get your thoughts out of your mind. You can't just say it to yourself in your head in the shower. At least, at a minimum, write down the bullet points of what you want your presentation to be, and then like edit at least one round those bullet points. Don't totally wing it, okay? And then on the other side, you can overdo it too. You can overcook it. So don't ask ChatGPT to write you out a full script that's like multiple pages of what you plan to orate. You know, that's not gonna work either. You won't be able to memorize something. Memory goes away weird up there when adrenaline kicks in. So there's a happy medium, and it's robust bullet points on a page or two, depending on length. And the last thing is practice your speech with a timer, because man, things change when that timer comes on. Put an alarm on and practice it with a timer. And even better, if you can practice it out loud while you're like folding laundry or raking leaves or throwing a tennis ball against your garage door, some sort of kinetic movement, right? It's kind of like, I guess, athletes training in a different oxygen environment so that when they come back to sea level, it's like easier because there's more air, right? If you train on time in kinetic movement and practice with just the bullets, your authentic voice of the speech will come out, and you practice that 3, 4, 5 times and then let it go, because whatever's going to happen up there on stage is going to be beautiful. If you drop something, you'll know, but your audience won't know. So continue forward. Last advice is see it like play. Things are better when we approach it like play, like recess, right? It is. It's a playful moment. It's not going to last more than an hour for a keynote. It'll be over. Just go play.
I love that. That was well said. I also tried that a tennis ball thing. That was tough, but it definitely, I think it prepared me. I think I've noticed with me at least that when there's those moments of angst, or I feel like I'm about to lose my train of thought, I'm like, if you just gather yourself for 2 seconds, yes, pause it, you'll get back to it. So when I had the opportunity to do it a couple of weeks ago, it went well. And it was just like, I had a moment where I like kind of blanked out for like 2 seconds. Not sure, because I was nervous, but I just think I just hit this state and I was like, what am I about to say next? And then I thought about the practice thing. So I do appreciate that. Well, I appreciate you and the time too. I think this was great. I definitely have, as always, learned a lot when we get a chance to connect. But I am curious, for those who may be curious about learning more about you outside of LinkedIn, where I know that they can find you because you're at the top of the top.
For at least the next 59 days.
You are at the top of the top. Is there a place that people can find out about Leaders Uplifted who may be interested in learning more about that?
Yes, yes, yes. LeadersUplifted.com is our website home for all of the good things that we are doing. We're offering keynotes and workshops. We're offering, of course, custom designed learning experiences. And I currently have a waitlist running for people who want to get certified in the methodology. So that's pretty exciting for instructional designers and HR leaders. But right now, what I would love all of your listeners to do, Rashad, I think they might be into it. I write a weekly blog called Uplifted Weekly. It's all about mindset tactics, camaraderie and teamwork tactics, and how leaders speak in their own self-talk to themselves, and especially how they speak to others so that we can find more happiness at work.
Yep, I will let them know. As always, I appreciate you just taking the time. It was funny even before we got started, just seeing the organicness of setting this up. Was great.
We did it. We persevered through.
But it was funny. And I think that, again, you bring such a light, not only to me, but I think to anybody who gets an opportunity to connect with you. So I do appreciate your time. And as always, for those who are listening, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform. Check me out on YouTube, TikTok, wherever you may find or see my voice or hear my voice. So, as always, I appreciate you all. Till next time, peace.